Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. As always, check us out at ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening is absolutely no one. So, hey. But I do have a really cool guest in studio. Tonight we're going to be talking with super genius and principal engineer of Blackfire Engineering Limited, Bill Real, about firearm finishes, lubrication, the awesomeness or lack thereof of 1911s, and hey, maybe Starbucks if we feel like getting around to it. Hey, Bill, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Hey, not too bad. So, if you don't mind just hopping right in, can you tell the listeners a little bit about your background, what you do, what Blackfire does?
Sure. I'm the principal engineer at Blackfire Engineering. I'm a PhD engineer in both nuclear and materials engineering. Blackfire does a number of different, or has a number of different areas of thrust. One is in coatings or tribology, lubrication, energetic materials, and forensic sensors.
Okay. So, and when we're talking about firearms coating, that's going to be stuff like Smith & Wesson's Melanite, Glock's Tenefer, you know, standard bluing, all
sure.
that good stuff. So if you don't mind, we'll just hop right in. It seems to be a bit of contention as far as what's good, what's not. Everyone's got their own personal preferences as far as, like, durability and aesthetics go. But I guess, why do firearms coatings actually matter?
Well, there are three reasons to coat firearms in general, whether we're talking about pistols or rifles or shotguns. First is aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys like black finishes and won't touch anything other than a black finish, which would include some spray-on finishes like Cerakote, Armor Tough, Armory Coat, those types, where it's really just an epoxy phenolic resin. Then there are the more functional coatings, functional reasons for coatings, which include corrosion protection and wear protection. All of these interplay into touching on the reliability of a design, as well as the long-term durability of a firearm.
Okay. So as far as, I guess, a little thought of aspect of that, as far as the, and you mentioned durability, but when a lot of people think durability, they think of like surface rust and corrosion resistance, things like that. But there's actually, as far as like the longevity of the gun itself and the mechanical parts of the gun, the coating is pretty important.
Absolutely. For example, it should come as no surprise that if you hard chrome a gun, you can have hydrogen brittlement. And one of the iconic failures for a firearm's finish that's coated with hard chrome is a 1911 that's coated with that. If you could find any gunsmith out there, you'll probably have a drawer full of broken slide stops. The highest impact area on a 1911, for example, is that. And there's no way to keep out hydrogen and brittlement from a part that is hard chromed.
Okay. Is that where you see some of the manufacturers that are known for, you know, a pretty durable firearm, or as far as one that's pretty reliable, they change a small part of their process and then all of a sudden their reputation sort of goes downhill because of things like that?
Absolutely. If you change a firearm finish, it may look different and it may be a nice marketing move. But the problem arises that firearms are designed, especially recoil-operated firearms like pistols, are designed around a certain friction environment. If you take a low-friction firearm like a Glock and change from the Tenefer-based finish to a ultra-slick electroless nickel finish, then you don't get that big of a change. Take a 1911 or a Browning High Power that is a bit more friction-intensive, change it so that you've maybe cut that in half or by a factor of 10. All of a sudden, the slide can operate a whole lot faster. You can actually have the slide outrun the magazine in terms of the ability to push a cartridge up into place and strip it out correctly.
Okay. So do you think that, I guess when people start worrying about finishes on their guns and they start buying guns, you know, based off of the finish that it has, and I know that a lot of people do that, you know, and it can be the marketing behind it or maybe just the perceived benefits. Do you think that for most of the things that a finish does for us, people are seeing the benefit of that, or do they not put enough rounds through the gun for it to even matter? Or does it depend?
It depends. It depends a lot. on guys like certain guys that shoot competition or are heavy into defensive use of pistols, more thought should probably be placed on their finish. For a lot of guys that just buy a gun out of the gun store and put 50 rounds a year through it, it may not matter that much.
Okay. So, and we'll you kind of touched on this a little bit, and I know we're going to get into it the next segment, but certain finishes have a little bit more of a lubricating quality than others as far as how efficient they operate or don't operate, or?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
The finishes, and there's a number of different categories of finishes, and that's probably the best way to approach this. You have aesthetic-based finishes.
Okay.
Firearm I took with me today was a Turnbull Blued Tactical Elite Super Grade from Wilson Combat, and that was Turnbull Blued because I liked the way it looked.
Right.
I also have guns that we fire our special 1911s that I've coated with electroless nickel that had a good deal of of Teflon in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets about as close to a quote-unquote lubrication-free design as you could get. There are other coating systems that you can use that mitigate wear, mitigate holster wear. They absorb, or they're blacker than would otherwise be possible. So it depends on what you're really looking for. So if you're gonna go out after the correct coating for what you want, honesty with yourself as to what matters to you is the most important thing.
Okay, and that seems to be something that a lot of people in every aspect of the hobby and the industry and the self-defense thing seem to lose sight of is as far as understanding exactly what they're going to be doing with it or not doing with it. We got another minute and 40 seconds or so. We're talking with Bill Real with Black Fire Engineering Limited about firearms finishes. Do you have a personal preference as far as just an easy one that you tend to go back to, or does it depend?
Actually, no. I've got a favorite, and it's an embarrassing weakness of mine. I am a sucker for bluing.
Mm-hmm.
Charcoal bluing, machine bluing is just the nicest looking finish you can get, and I like holster wear. So
yeah,
I know coming from the PhD engineer that says yeah, use my Wonder Finish. I know that sounds a little weird, but.
Well, no, I mean, not really. We've all got, I guess it really depends on what side you fall of it. I've never minded having a gun that looks beat up just because that means I probably used it.
Oh, sure. And it makes me look like I'm something a little bit more tactical than a sack of wet leather. So
yeah, I guess. Or maybe you bought it off the used rack at your local gun store. Depends. Police trade on. Yeah, police trade on. I don't know why people don't do that. It's like pre-distressed guns. You know, they do it with jeans. Why not do it with
furniture, too.
Yeah, exactly. Charge extra money for it.
Absolutely.
Hey, if you end up doing that, I want some credit there. You know, I get some royalties. So we're talking with Bill Real, Blackfire Engineering. Another 28, 27 seconds. Why don't you say something inflammatory about firearms lubrication real quick, and then we'll get more in depth when we come back from the commercial.
You should only use oil on your gun if it has an oil pump and an oil filter.
Ooh. You mean the Mobil 1 synthetic? Not the best thing to use?
Unless you have an oil pump on the gun.
Huh. Okay. Well, hey, we'll get more into that with Bill Real, Blackfire Engineering Limited. Some more cool science stuff when we get back. But right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. We are talking with Mr. Bill Real from Blackfire Engineering Limited about firearms coatings and lubrication and all sorts of cool science stuff. So when we were leaving the last segment there, you said something interesting as far as oil goes, and I think it was along the lines of you should only use oil on your gun if it's got an oil pump and filter. I'm sure you're going to get yelled at for that at some point, maybe by the listeners, but do you mind quantifying that a little bit and sort of expanding on that?
Absolutely. You have to keep in mind that oil was designed to be moved around and to pick up dirt and dirt from an environment, move it away, move heat away, and be cleaned and then repumped back in. If you take a firearm and you're not lubricating it correctly, which means more than just a little bit of oil is coming out from the back of the slide or something to that effect, you're allowing metal-to-metal friction. And I've got a 1911 that's got a lot of rounds through it from somebody else right now that exhibited that exact thing. He may have lubricated it every couple hundred rounds, but in all honesty, that's not enough if you're going to use oil.
Right.
Now, the caveat to that is, especially with the 1911 world right now, the 9mm 1911s, which are gaining in popularity, for a reason. Don't have enough horsepower to make that slide move with something with a bit more viscosity in it. And remember, viscosity is just a measure of how much shear strength a fluid has. So oil is grease, and grease is oil with and without a thickener.
Okay. So, and I'm sure Todd won't mind us talking about him briefly. And for those that don't know, Todd Green, he was on the show, episode 8 or 9. recently started, and I meant to talk about this, but this is tangential, but started a charity for cancer, rampageforthecure.org, and I will post a link to that up on the Facebook page, but worth giving some money to, and honestly, I'll donate to any charity that's got an archery reference in it, so hey. But Todd's put a lot of rounds through a 9mm 1911 as of late, and they, as you said, seem to have gained in popularity because people tend to buy the guns that he shoots for a year, and they work, so. But as far as oil and grease, we'll get back to that. The grease has a thickener in it, so what's that allow it to do?
Just stays put. In other words, it's just like a wheel bearing. Think about your car as a good example of lubrication. The engine's lubricated with oil, and the axle and transmission are lubricated in oil. They're also bathed in it. The engine has a pump and a filter associated with it. The transmission and the axles usually have a oil bath in it. Now, it may be gear oil, it may be transmission oil, but it doesn't really matter. They're saturated with oil.
Right.
Now, all the suspension components, the wheel bearings included, are greased. Where you don't have the capability of lubricating it on a very constant basis, you really should be using grease. Now, there are different grease viscosities. That's not to say take wheel bearing grease, throw it on your slide, and forget it ever existed. Just like everything else in your life, you need to be cognizant and aware of what you're actually doing. If you pick something that's really, really thick, red wheel bearing grease is a great example of that, and you're running it in a 9mm, you may not get the gun to run at all.
Right, because it's going to create enough friction that the slide just doesn't cycle and it doesn't eject or whatever.
Right. It'll slow the slide velocity down.
Okay, so I guess I'm trying to think of exactly the way I want to ask this. Why do you think so much oil is used in firearms applications? I mean, are there times that you don't want to use grease as far as like environmental concerns or temperature concerns? Or,
well, absolutely. Grease, every lubricant has its proper application.
Okay.
If you're going to take, you know, Ohio as an example, 1911 is an example. I have a really nice 1911 with me right now, and it's got a polyurea grease in it. It's about halfway between oil and grease. It gets re-lubricated every range session. But, you know, every once a week is when it gets lubricated. If you put oil into the gun and you don't shoot it for a week, chances are you won't have much of the oil there that you originally applied.
Right.
And this may not matter for you and me, but for the cop that uses his gun to save his life or to save somebody else's life, proper lubrication can ensure the functioning of the gun more than just about anything else. Springs and lubrication are the most important maintenance aspects for that type of a piece of equipment.
Okay. So if we're, if we have a concealed handgun license and we're carrying our to use the popular term, our CCW pistol out and about all the time, thinking about lubrication becomes very, very important, I guess, as far as...
Absolutely.
All right. As far as the maintenance of the pistol goes and in lubricating properly, and you've stated a preference for grease, and that actually we were talking before the show, and it makes a lot more sense to me now. I've always just been kind of one of those people that I'll soak a gun in whatever I happen to have handy.
Sure.
And shoot it until it jams and then clean it and soak it again. And
that's a common recommendation by some even very knowledgeable, very experienced people. I'll use whatever's free.
Yeah.
Well, then that's fine. On a $500 gun that you're not planning on using for the rest of your life, that's fine. If you have a $5,000 Wilson that you want to keep and hand down, then all of a sudden, a little bit more thought into it's not a bad idea. Or if you're going to, you know, bet your hide on it, it probably is worth a little bit more consideration.
Okay. So as far as, I guess the first thing, when we're talking about lubricating a pistol properly and we're talking about, you know, picking a lubricant that fits our application, what are the things that we should be thinking of as far as, you know, the tolerances of the pistol, the caliber of the pistol? I mean, what are we looking at?
More so than caliber, it really comes down to clearances.
Okay.
So if you have a really tight-fitting gun, like a Les Bear or a Wilson 1911, they are less tolerant of incorrect lubrication than something that is considerably looser.
Mm-hmm.
And often will get people to think they're running better dry. So it really comes down to the specific application and whether or not the gun was designed around that that particular caliber. 1911s that run a 38 Super, 45 ACP, 10 millimeter are much more tolerant of lubrication choices than 9 millimeter 1911s.
Okay. I guess another question. You see guns, you know, and I'll use Glock as an example, and I like Glocks fine. Some people think I don't because I run a SIG, but that's mainly because the gun is pointed at my femoral artery on a day-to-day basis, and I haven't gotten to be one of the cool gadget beta testers as of yet. But, you know, you take a Glock, and they've got they're known for their reliability, I guess, up until a couple years ago when they had some teething issues with their Generation 4s, which, depending on who you asked, are fixed or not fixed. I've run a couple Gen 4 Glocks and not had any problems, but maybe I'm charmed. But you take a gun like that that has relatively loose tolerances, and I guess it doesn't matter as much?
Well, first off, it's not so much the tolerances. Glocks are actually machined to very very tight tolerances.
All right.
They're clearances.
Okay.
Right?
Explain the difference, if you don't mind.
A tolerance is the allowable error in machining. So if you have a slide that's got a rail dimension that's supposed to be 1.5 inches plus or minus 5/1000ths of an inch, it's got a reasonably tight tolerance. It's not quite like a hand-fit one where they're looking for, you know, 1 to 1.5 thousandths tolerance, but it's the allowable error in machining. Clearance, on the other hand, is the designed-in space to allow dirt, debris, heat, or swelling of a part because of heat to still function. So one is engineered in, the other one is a function of the manufacturing that you use.
Okay. So the Glock is engineered then to have those clearances.
Exactly.
All right. So when you have that, does the lubrication matter as much there? Or
It depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about getting through the next two magazines, no. If you're talking about making the gun last for the rest of your life, yes, it does.
Okay.
When Glock designed their gun, they designed it with minimal frame rail. Now, the plus side of that is made it very tolerant of incorrect or non-existent lubrication. The downside of that is you don't have as much rail there. The gun's not as rigid. It becomes less tolerant of having a light or laser attached to the frame because it flexes a whole lot more.
Right.
Adding mass to that will change how the gun operates.
Which they ran into with some of their 40 caliber pistols a couple years ago, I want to say, which is tangential and also a problem that's fixed.
Sure.
Supposedly. Anyway, continue, please.
So it becomes more of an issue of what you're wanting out of the gun. Just like in a finish, it really depends on what you want. Do you want the gun to not exhibit any holster wear? Well, the Diamond Light Carbon is a great finish for that. Do you want the gun to operate without lubrication or with poor lubrication? Design in those clearances and assume the extra wear and tear on the gun is going to be a fact of life. For a disposable tool, sure, that's not a big deal.
Right.
For something you want to maintain as an heirloom, it becomes a bigger issue.
Yeah.
So if you use grease, it typically stays where you put it and continues to lubricate for a longer period of time.
Okay. So I guess the flip side of that, and I'm sure that we'll hear this afterwards or maybe later in the show. As far as you put grease, does that tend to sludge up at all or collect, you know, sand or dirt or anything like that and affect, you know, reliability of the firearm? Or is that environmental issues that people are concerned about that they don't necessarily need to worry about, at least around here?
It's a bit more of a myth than anything else that grease attracts more dirt and oil than dirt than oil does. Oil, if it's there, will attract dirt just as effectively as grease will.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is it tends to run out and evaporate, so it gives the appearance that it doesn't collect as much dirt.
Okay.
If it's properly lubricated, correctly lubricated, it'll collect as much dirt whether you're using running grease or oil.
Okay. So I guess the where people get confused is, well, I don't see anything sludge up here.
Right.
Well, the reason for that is there's
no lubrication left.
Okay. And, that's interesting. We're talking with Bill Real, Black Fire Engineering Limited, about coatings and lubrication and all that. Now, you've actually come up with a new coating that I've been testing at least for the last couple months, pretty impressed with. We're going to be talking about that when we get back. You want to tease anybody as far as to why it's the new next magic unicorn fairy dust thing that people should get?
Sure. It's got all of the hardness that hard chrome does and much superior corrosion resistance.
All right. Perfect. So when we get back, we'll talk more about that, and we're going to announce a little contest that we're going to be running here. But right now, you are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
The place to talk. 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Right now we are talking with Mr. Bill Real of Black Fire Engineering Limited. If you would like to call in and discuss any of the things that he has said, you can get a hold of us at 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Try and take your calls at the end of the evening if we're able to, and I'm sure that someone wants to say something about don't use oil on your gun. So anyway, for those that don't follow the Facebook page, I've been testing out a new finish on my SIG 226. Full disclosure, was not charged for the finish, but also have not offered anything in return other than opinions on whether or not it's lasted, which so far it has. Bill is the gentleman that's come up with that finish. So if you don't mind... telling me a little bit about how this came about and all that and what it does and doesn't do, and we'll kind of go from there. And we do have a nice little giveaway we may or may not be doing, so we'll get to that in a second too, though.
Sure. The finish that you're describing is an electroless nickel finish. We added a couple of unique twists to it. Traditionally, there's a couple of different shops out there that apply electroless nickel. We have a high Teflon content electroless nickel finish that we can tailor for the individual customer. The unique thing that we're doing beyond that custom finishing, is that we use tungsten as our bath stabilizer. So if you take a look at most electroless nickel finishes out there, they can have a yellowish or orange hue to them.
Mm-hmm.
What we've done is remove that yellowish orange hue and replaced it with a nice gray tone that is a little bit more pleasing to the eye, in my opinion, but also has the added benefit of being a slightly harder finish. The tungsten's there at about 3% by weight, and it forms hard particles, essentially, on the surface to prevent wear through the coating. So most electroless nickel finishes that have Teflon in them are actually designed to wear to expose new Teflon and continue lubricating the pistol.
Right.
So we added a bit of tungsten to it to slow down that wear and make it a little bit harder and a little bit more resilient.
Okay. If you don't mind getting into it as much as you're able to, so I know
sure.
There's some things that you're allowed to say or not allowed to say. What was that originally designed for?
The original coating was designed for a aircraft part in a highly corrosive environment.
Okay. So, and that's it's a much cooler story if you were able to get into it, but alas... I keep having all these guests on that could say really cool things but aren't allowed to, and it's just terrible. Anyway, so as far as why that matters to folks, the corrosion resistance, the main reason I'm testing it is just because I'm sort of known for rusting guns.
Sure.
Glocks were my favorite guns to rust that you're not supposed to be able to rust. So Actually, it's lasted to this point so much that I'm taking it and sitting it on the ledge in the shower every day now just to, you know, make it really tough. So you don't have a name for it yet, right?
No, I don't.
Okay, you're maybe going to have a name for it at some point?
Maybe.
Okay, so if you do not follow the Facebook page, you might want to, facebook.com/ballisticradio. What we're going to be doing is people can submit their ideas for the name of this new firearms finish, and I'll post photos of my gun coated with it. And if you select one of those, not saying that you're going to, but if you do select one of those, you're going to coat something for somebody for free?
Sure, I'd be happy to coat a firearm for free.
Of their choice. So, hey, free stuff if you listen to Ballistic Radio and they're more creative than I am. See, I keep trying to come up with good names for it, but Unicorn Fairy Dust is, you know, it's vaguely homosexual, I guess. I don't know. Maybe if it was Rainbow Unicorn Fairy Dust. Anyway, so as far as the finishes go and the self-lubricating finishes go, is that something that you should count on or not so much? I mean,
again, it depends on the application.
Okay.
And we should mention that for pistols, the discussion is a little bit more academic than it is for something like an AR-15.
Okay.
But for in back to speaking towards finishes that minimize the lubrication requirement, if you're going to carry the gun more than shoot it, it has a definite utility.
Okay.
Right? It ensures that your gun is properly lubricated for the magazine or magazine and a half that you shoot.
All right.
If you're going to shoot it competitively or through a class and you don't want to lubricate it, you should seriously question your thought process on that.
Well, in fairness, too, and I'm just kind of doing this to see how long I can go. See, several things. You hear about SIGs not being very reliable as far as recent, you know, quality assurance issues. I haven't found that to be true. I think I've got around 3,400 rounds through the one I'm carrying right now that's got your coating on it. I haven't cleaned it yet in that 3,400 rounds. Haven't re-lubricated it from the initial, and I'm not going to tell you what lube I used, but it smelled good. And, you know, I guess I could use it for chapstick if I wanted to. But I've been really impressed so far as, you know, hasn't affected reliability. Now, you touched on an interesting point. For pistols, it's kind of academic, but for AR-15 specifically, very important.
Exactly. I should note that you're getting away with that on your SIG because the coating that has the Teflon in it is actually relatively thick. And all you're doing is wearing through the coating. Now,
right.
As soon as that happens, you can always send it back for the lifetime warranty and we'll coat it again.
Right.
But it's not a good practice just in terms of ensuring reliability.
You did tell me to break it, though, if I could.
I did.
So I'm trying my very, very best. Now, as far as AR-15s go, we'll talk about this a little bit because AR-15s are a favorite topic of mine. Right now, we're talking with Bill Real of Blackfire Engineering Limited about coatings and lubrication. Sure. But as far as AR-15s go, I'm of the keep it extremely well lubricated with an oil.
Absolutely.
I douse it pretty much. You've seen my Knights Armament SBR.
Absolutely.
Before, and it was pretty leaky, for lack of a better term. Why does that lubrication matter so much in that application?
Well, the bolt gets much, much hotter. You're funneling gas byproducts, combustion byproducts, right into the bolt, so they can get very hot very quickly, especially if somebody's taking out and being in a serious carbine class where they're shooting a lot of rounds through the gun.
Right.
It starts to matter because you start to actually cook off the lubricant that you put on there. So coming up with a better coating and better lubrication system, and really coatings and lubricants are hand in hand. A good lubricant without a good coating will only get you so far.
Right.
A good coating without a good lubricant will only get you so far.
Okay.
The two together will ensure reliability, durability, and longevity, which is the goal, right?
Yeah.
Who wants to throw away a $2,000 AR?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess the other thing, too, is that when you start to experience that, you know, the heat where it's cooking off the lubricant and all that, you start to see parts breakage because of
friction.
Right. Exactly. So right now, a couple minutes before the break, no one on the line. So if you would like to call in and talk with Bill about pretty much anything, 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255 if you're out of the area. So, you know, we've hit on firearms coatings and lubrication and sort of durability and all that. Is there a really good idea, I guess, of durability? What do you think there's a disconnect between actual firearms durability and what people expect from firearms durability as far as round counts go? Or
I think that question is a difficult one to answer.
Oh, chicken.
Just, yeah, well, it depends on the audience, okay. Right? You and I may have differing opinions as to what firearms durability should be. If any part of my pistol breaks in 10,000 rounds, I'm going to jump up and down and yell at Wilson Combat.
Right.
If a SIG spring breaks in 10,000 rounds, we may just shrug and say, okay, well, the trigger return spring needs to be replaced.
Yeah, which I think I'll probably clean my gun at some point when I start
sure.
replacing springs, which will probably be shortly. We've got David from Cincinnati on the line. He's got a maintenance question. We've got about a minute and a half. Do you feel like taking a call, Bill?
Sure thing.
All right. David, are you there?
Hey, I'm here. John, Bill.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate all the good information and all the, just good information about new coatings and whatnot. But if you could, Bill, if you could really weigh in on some of the products that you use more primarily for handgun maintenance. We're doing a whole lot of shooting of handguns these days. But I would really like to know, you know, some of the products and maybe some good websites or some good places here in town that give, you know, full information about maintenance of a number of different models. A couple of Ruger, Smith & Wesson 422, which is a pretty tight little pistol, and, of course, Glock. You know, if you could throw out some good information on products and good places to get information on real maintenance, that would be great.
Okay. I'll let Bill kind of field that, but I'm going to guess he's not going to want to say too much just so he doesn't get sued by anybody. We got about 30 seconds, and we'll get more into your call after the break, David. Bill.
Okay.
The key is to, for cleaning a gun, is not to worry about the lead or copper fouling as much as just removing the powder fouling. Best okay. products, any of the top names out there are going to be great products, and they're all essentially the same thing. Shooter's Choice, Hoppies, all of those are great products. For lubrication, I would pick anything that has a low viscosity grease. My current favorite is the Wilson Ultima Lubes. They're a polyurea grease, so they're very tacky and they tend to stay put, but they're also thin enough where they don't typically interfere with function.
Yeah. So, and hey, if it's all right, David, we'll get a little bit more into that after the commercial, if you don't mind holding the line.
No sweat.
Hey, right now we're talking with Bill Real, Blackfire Engineering Limited. We're going to talk with him a little bit more about maintenance, coatings, and whatever else we come up with. But right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
This is your exclusive home for Glenn Beck.
Oh, man.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Right now we're talking with Mr. Bill Real, Principal Engineer at Blackfire Engineering Limited, about all sorts of coatings and lubrication and gun maintenance stuff. We were talking with David before the break about, he had a question or two. I think he's still on hold, and we'll get to him in a minute. But if you'd like to get in line, you can give us a call, 513-749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Try and get to your call at the end of the show. David, are you still there?
I am. I'm right here.
Excellent. So did Bill help you out there as far as that goes?
Sure. Well, Bill, if you could, I'm sure you know the manufacturer's recommendations for cleaning and lubrication of, for instance, the Glock 19. And I don't believe in any case it talks about a low viscosity grease, although maybe I could be mistaken. It is standard maintenance, would you recommend a low viscosity grease in those 1, 2, 3, or 4 little places where you should lubricate a Glock 19, or would you go with a standard, standard type of, you know, gun lubricant, just an oil?
I use that low viscosity grease on just about everything I own. But let me back up a little bit and explain why I said powder residue is the most important thing to remove, and the copper and lead is not as important.
Okay.
Copper and lead in the firearm is really not going to do anything to increase wear or decrease reliability. Firing residue, not so much the gunpowder or from gunpowder, but from the fire or from the primer, will have abrasive particles in it. Most primers have glass added to it to increase the internal friction to ensure reliability and ignition. That gets blown out of the primer pocket during firing, as well as a big component of the residue that you see in a or in gunshot residue. Some manufacturers actually put a little bit of aluminum in there to increase the resonance of a primer. The problem with that is it tends to oxidize, forming aluminum oxide, and what you've done every time the primer goes off is create a lapping compound. So removing that periodically is a good thing if you want to mitigate wear or reduce wear, I should say. But to answer your question about lubrication, like I said, the Glocks, the M&Ps, the service pistols, or firearms in general, tend to be very lubricant tolerant. And they're done that, or they're designed that way. They're actually designed to minimize the loss in reliability without proper lubrication. The reason I suggest a low viscosity grease, and polyurea greases are one of my favorites, is because they typically are very tacky. In other words, they stay on the metal. They stay where you apply them, but they're not so high in viscosity as to impede functioning. So if you take a 9mm 1911, that 9mm doesn't have enough momentum. It doesn't have enough horsepower to make the slide operate as fast as a 45 ACP would. So anytime you add something like a grease to the slides or the frame rails, you've slowed down an already too slow slide.
Understood.
Right? For a Glock, that's not really an issue. It was designed for a 9mm to begin with, and a 19 especially has a lower slide mass than a 17. And it typically has a much smaller frictional or contact area. So you can get away with doing things that on a Glock 17 or a Glock 19 would choke up and kill a 9mm 1911.
And I'm going to admit I've owned Glock 9mm before and bought them and never once cleaned them the entire time I've owned them through 4 to 7,000 rounds. So I guess with the Glock, it's probably not as important as, like you said, Bill, with a...
Right,
a higher end firearm. Hopefully, that answers your question, David.
Well, let me take it just one step further here. And you're speaking of the firing residue from the primer. How much would you compare that for rimfire? Do you get more or less firing residue from a rimfire? Because I do have an older 422 that I'd like to take care of. We've been doing a lot of plinking with it as well. Certainly not something that the calibers or the quality that you fellows are running these days, but certainly it's still something that we'd like to keep around and running well. Is that something that would also benefit from a low viscosity grease or, well, back to my first point, is rimfire? You know, do you get more residue from the rimfire than you would from a primer, centerfire?
The actual priming composition for a rimfire or centerfire is very, very similar. Rim fires typically have a little bit of Berlin green or Prussian green added to it so that when in manufacturing, the cartridge case actually will have a wet priming compound dropped into the bottom of the case, and a dowel goes down to spread that priming compound into the rim. So aside from that dye, they're essentially the same composition. There may actually be a little bit more glass in a rim fire, but not significantly so.
So
okay.
Does that answer your question, David?
And how about a low viscosity grease in an older Smith & Wesson 422?
As long as it maintains its functional reliability, then yeah, I would still go with the grease.
Okay, I'll give it a whirl.
All right. Hey, thanks for calling in, David. I appreciate you listening.
Thanks for being there.
Hey, no problem. You enjoy the rest of your night. So, no one else on the line right now. If you'd like to call in, 513-749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Real quick, Bill, if Starbucks has been in the news this week, and I kind of wanted to touch on it anyway, but do you have an opinion that you feel like sharing, or do you want to let me get yelled at?
Oh, no, I'll share the opinion.
Okay.
I am a staunch supporter of the Second Amendment without any restrictions placed on it. I am all for the right to open carry. However, I question the prudence of such a decision in a place where it doesn't serve anybody's purpose to do so.
Mm. And I'll take that one step further. I've open carried in the past. I'm not a big fan of it anymore, just as I get older. I see the point as far as from an activist standpoint, dealing it with a long gun, you know, in today's environment, probably not the best decision as far as if you want to keep people not panicked, I guess. That, you know, it's an interesting situation. I think that we're our own worst enemy a little bit when it comes to stuff like this. We got a couple callers on the line that I want to try and get to. We've got Mary. Let's see what we can do for Mary. Mary, are you there?
Hello.
Yes, Mary. How are you doing tonight?
Fine. I appreciate you taking my call.
No problem.
I am a senior, a widow, and an empty nester.
Okay.
I live on a corner. I'm in a wheelchair. I can walk, but I spend more time in the wheelchair.
Right.
With the way things are going, neighborhoods change, I need something. You know, I don't need a long gun, but something I can have for protection. And unfortunately, I'm a novice. I don't know anything about guns.
Well, I guess my first question would be, and we've only got about a minute and a half, so I'll try and do this fast. How seriously do you plan on taking it? As far as is this something you're going to be practicing with on a semi-regular basis, or just something that you're going to take out once and then have around?
Oh, no. I'm an only daughter of a detective. I have a lot of respect for a gun and the use of it and so forth. That's why I'm calling the expert.
Oh, I don't know about expert, but I was going to make a Holiday Inn joke. I stayed at a Holiday Inn last night. I didn't do that either. To answer your question, Mary, your best bet, and this isn't really probably the answer you want, but your best bet is to pick a trainer local to you. Are you in the Dayton area?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay.
Belmont.
What I would do is there's an outfit called Mad Duck Training out in West Elkton. The guy that runs that, John, is a good dude, and he knows what he's talking about. I have not taken one of his classes, but I've had several conversations with him and not disagreed on anything that I don't usually disagree with people on. So. The nice thing about if you go to one of his classes is he's got firearms that you can try out, and that way you can get an idea as far as to what works for you or doesn't work for you before you spend money on one.
Uh-huh.
And that's probably your best bet. But, I mean, any service pistol should work fine for you. If you're recoil sensitive or have a hard time operating it, you can use a .22 as long as it's a reliable one. It's not my first pick, but it sure beats nothing. So.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Well, I have three great American bulldogs, and the one fellow weighs 155 pounds. He looks like St. Bernard.
Well, there you go.
I want them hurt.
Yeah. Well, hey, hopefully that helped you out. I appreciate you calling in tonight, Mary.
Thank you.
Have a good night. So, Bill, thanks for stopping in. That sure went quick. I appreciate you coming by tonight. So, next week, we're going to be talking with Greg Elifritz of Active Response Training about active shooters and the problems associated with those. But make sure you check us out at ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening. Check us out next Sunday, 7 p.m. right here on 55 KRC, the talk station.